Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Yeah!
Ah!
Hey, it is a brand new week, and I am feeling it, John. It's getting more optimistic every single day. All sorts of good news out there. And, of course, last night, The Last Dance, we're going to talk to, coming up for you in just a minute, Les Snead, the Rams GM, is going to be here. We'll talk about the Rams draft. But, Jono, last night, fantastic two episodes of The Last Dance.
Okay, I got to tell you a funny thing. Yeah, you know, we growl at the beginning of everything. so normally we do this show from the studio.
Yes.
So I'm going to mess with her a little bit. Lisa just texted me after she heard me growl.
Yes.
Are you okay? So I'm going to tell, okay, right now I'm going to tell her, come up here. She's going to come up here thinking she's going to find me passed out on the floor.
So she's not listening to the show. She just thinks.
No, and she doesn't she doesn't even know that we growl.
Ireland hit the deck. Yeah. Ireland's on the ground.
So now if she doesn't come up here, that means she either completely knows what's
up. Or just doesn't care.
Or doesn't care. Yeah, so it's not good either way for me if she doesn't show. Okay, come here. Here, you gotta be able to hear this. So is the reason, is the reason you asked me if I was okay because you heard me growl?
Yes, you were very loud.
Do you not know that we do that every show?
I somehow haven't heard that.
Loyal listener.
Yeah, you had no idea for like 2 years.
I've missed that this entire time.
Well, I'm glad you came up. I said if you don't come up here, that would bode very bad for me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, that is so great. That is so great.
So if you're wondering how it is I can say anything I want, that's why. She literally has no idea what's on the show.
You know, it's a funny story. So one time a few years back, I had Mavis Leno on a show. I was doing Jay Leno's wife. And I said to Mavis Leno, boy, last night, because I was trying to stay clued in. I wanted to be smart and know something about Jay. I said, boy, Jay had Meryl Streep on last night. That's pretty big deal. And she said, I don't watch that show.
Well,
pretty much the same thing.
I know how Jay felt.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, by the way, Les Snead, you asked me about The Last Dance. Let me answer your question first.
Yes.
I thought this show is fantastic. I think it gets better with each episode.
Yep.
I'm kind of bent that we're already, what would it be, about 40% through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got four down, six to go. Every time the thing ends, I go, wait a minute, that was an hour? And then they reload, and I go, wait a minute, that was an hour again?
It just flies.
I mean,
flies.
It's just brilliant.
It just flies.
All right, so, I think that most people are coming off very well on this. Like, for example, Michael Jordan said, and maybe there's stuff coming up, but he said that people weren't going to like him as much after this thing aired. I'll tell you what, after four episodes, I like him more than ever. I think he's making a compelling case for being the greatest player of all time.
I would argue, John, that for me, and I, you know, we all get trapped in recency bias, right? What we just saw, we think is the best. All of a sudden, I'm looking at Jordan the Jordan rules, the way he was treated, the way he was tackled, and he was still able to do it. In my mind now, he's again elevated to the greatest player ever played.
Well, and let me give you the Michael Thompson argument. Michael, if you ever ask Michael, if you give him the Sophie's Choice question,
yes,
who is better, Magic or Kobe? It's almost impossible for Michael to answer it because he holds both those guys in such high esteem.
Sure, sure.
But if you make him do it, he will tell you it's Magic, and here's his reasoning. Look at who Magic had to go through to win his five titles. There was a couple of times in those Lakers-Celtics finals in 87-88 where there were eight Hall of Famers on the court.
Sure.
And you know, Jordan gets some of that credit, too, that he, you know, he had to go through the Celtics. He had to go through the Pistons. He had to go through the Lakers. Kobe's titles, and I, you know, I'm not sure that I agree with Michael. I think I might put Kobe ahead of Magic, but I got to see Kobe's entire career.
Sure.
And Magic play with him. But in this particular realm of the argument, Kobe's NBA finals were against Indiana, Philadelphia, New Jersey, then later Orlando, and finally Boston. There were no teams with three or four Hall of Famers that Kobe had to go through.
That Boston team was easily the best.
Right. And maybe if you want to argue Pierce, Garnett, I don't think anybody else gets in.
No,
Rondo?
I think that's it. Probably not.
Maybe Ray Allen? Does Ray Allen get in?
Yeah, Ray
maybe.
Allen might. Yeah.
Maybe. But four Hall of Famers on the other. You know, at one point when they were playing against the Celtics, all frontline Hall of Fame, Parrish, Bird, McHale, Dennis Johnson, Hall of Fame in the backcourt, Danny Ainge, no slouch,
yep,
and Casey Jones, a Hall of Fame coach. And then you get to the Pistons, Joe Dumars, Hall of Fame, Isaiah, Hall of Fame, Rodman, Hall of Fame.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, they had, I can't win that part of the argument.
What thuggery. What an ugly brand of basketball. I'd forgotten how ugly a brand of basketball that was. That was no fun to watch.
Well, and here's the flip side of what I was saying about how great Jordan comes off. And I think Phil comes off great, which I'm really happy about.
Really, really good.
We got Les Snead, so we'll swing back to it. Joining us right now is the general manager of the Rams, who I'm guessing did not sleep much this weekend, Les Snead. Les, thanks for coming on, man. How you holding
Les.
Up?
You know what I did do, though? I watched the what y'all were just talking about last night. The
what'd you think?
Going back, I'm a huge Phil Jackson fan. So at one time when I was probably living in the South, I was a Lakers fan because of Phil. But I was reading Phil's early books, some of those books they were showing that he wrote early in his life. For whatever reason, somebody connected me into this Phil Jackson guy. So bought into his paradigms, his philosophies, and been a fan of his my entire life, even though I've never met him.
Wow, we're going to have to arrange that sometime. We're going to have to get you two guys on the phone.
That would be a dream kind of arrangement. You know,
We'll see what we can do. Okay, let's talk about the draft. Les, you normally, Mace and I were both predicting and telling fans, don't be surprised if Les makes a trade. You're normally a pretty active trader on draft day, and you did do some maneuvering late, but you didn't do anything into the first round, and you stuck with your guns in the second round. Were you close at any point in making a trade?
I think I can say that basically as the draft, and we kind of knew it, Cam was our number one target at that pick. And you going through this right, you're trying to predict which runners are going to be available, and that was a position we definitely desired, especially early in this draft, the way the draft was going to go and the quality of runners. So in that situation, you are monitoring, you're trying to figure out, okay, what teams we did know that once, LSU went pick 32 the night before, there was going to be a run on running backs, and you try to figure out which teams are going to pick runners. And if there's a surprise team, you know, it could take one more off the board that could cause you maybe to try to attack and move up. So you're always trying to figure out who may pick the player you want before you. Is somebody behind you trying to move up to pick that player before you? But ultimately settled in and decided that educated guess that Cam was going to fall to us at 52.
You know, Les, I was absolutely on top of this with Cam Akers because I told everybody and virtually guaranteed you were going to go linebacker, and got it completely wrong. Why did you go runner there? Was that number one target for you all along?
We knew that we wanted to again increase, let's call it, explosiveness at the running back position in this draft after moving on from Todd. So it could have gone many different ways in that if Cam wasn't there and if there wasn't another running back that we felt like was worthy of that second round pick, you always have to have a plan to go, okay, who's our next running back after that? Is that particular player worth the second round pick there? And maybe if not, can you get that player later? And if so, where can you get that player? And that's always a guess. So it's not always going to fall the way you want it to, but the way this draft was going to work, it did seem like, was based on all the other positions going, that you were going to push the runners in this draft maybe into the second round, and that was going to be a good spot to pick one. And it worked out that way, where you were one pick away from no runners going in the first round.
Right. Yeah, the 32 pick was the first running back. We're talking to Les Snead, the GM of the Rams. You mentioned that Cam Akers was your target, and that was the guy you had your eye on at 52, and you got him out of Florida State. There were some other pretty good runners on the board, Les, including Dobbins from Ohio State, some other guys that you could make a pretty compelling argument. Why was Akers the guy that you targeted? What impressed you about Cam?
Cam was... You take a look at him at Florida State. One of the more impressive things that he did at Florida State was, and if you look at what's happened at that program the last couple of years, this year Cam was the only player drafted in Florida State. I think last year maybe they had one or two. So whatever's occurred there over, since Jimbo left, their talent has depleted, especially on the offensive line. But ultimately, this Cam Akers was one of the best players on that team, running behind probably a less than offensive line. There was a lot of defenses in the ACC lined up and said, today we got to stop Cam Akers, and they loaded the box to do it. And when you really broke him down and evaluating, you could see him, his vision, patience to find daylight when there wasn't a lot is probably more translatable to the NFL, because there's not going to be a lot of daylight in this league as well. So those type things are things you look at, things you really do when you get into the nuances. And you know what? When he was able to break tackles, he can run away from people, and he can catch the football. So he's definitely a three-down running back for us.
You go Van Jefferson with your second pick in the draft, wide receiver. Obviously, Brandon Cooks is no longer there. You've got Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Josh Reynolds. Where does Van Jefferson slot into that group, and what do you envision for him?
Van's an interesting, because we were coming in, even with the trade of Brandon, we felt like we had a deep receiver room with the emergence of Josh Reynolds over the past couple of years when he's gotten a chance to play and thrive when he did. But as we evaluate, once we made the trade for Brandon, we did want to come back, circle back, okay, really scrutinize the receivers that were going to be in and around our picks in the second, third round, just to make sure we weren't passing on somebody that's going to go on and be a productive player. But when we sat and watched Van, it's been said, right, really, really good route runner. Often in the draft room, we described him as some mix between Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, and kind of a combination of those two players, and those two players have been extremely successful for us, and especially in the Sean McVay offense. So he'll be able to come in and back up all positions and even contribute.
We're talking to Les Snead, the GM of the Rams. Les, I'm sure you don't pay any attention to mock drafts, but every website has them, and everybody's got one. Mason and I did one. The ESPN mock, which is basically Mel Kiper and Todd McShay, I don't know if you knew this, had Terrell Lewis from Alabama going to you at 52. He thought he was going to – they thought, oh, he's a good fit for the Rams. He's going to go either 52 or 57. You got him at 84. In the third round at 84, two-part question here. Were you surprised he was still there at 84, and what attracted you to him?
Well, I think anytime the draft falls that way for you, and it's someone that you could have drafted at 52 or 57, you decide to pass, and the player's still there for you around later.
You did look at him early at 52 and 57. He was on your board.
He was definitely a player that would be in the mix there, depending on how it would have fallen. So when he's there at 84, you know what? This is, it's a bonus, and those are the moments. Every draft doesn't work that way. But I think at the end of the day, might have fallen for the fact, obviously, for some of the medical issues he had there, early in his career at Alabama. That's speculation, but that's a possibility. But the thing that definitely attracts you, take the ability to rush out of it. With Brandon, our new defense coordinator, he really likes length on the edges. So Leonard Floyd being a long human being, Terrell Lewis being 6'5", 260-plus pounds, close to 34-inch arms, and this 84.13 wingspan, that's kind of NBA basketball-type wingspan. And so he definitely fit what Brandon likes to load up on the edges, because long people can help you stop the run, cover more ground, things like that. But his ability to explode in a short area is his calling card, along with his length to help him make QBs nervous every now and then rushing the passer.
Now, one pick that the so-called experts love, Les Snead from the Rams, by the way, is with us, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN, is safety Terrell Burgess from Utah, who you took at 104. You've got a really good young secondary. Last year, Taylor Rapp really emerged in his rookie season. John Johnson, obviously Jalen Ramsey's back there. Talk about what you saw in this kid out of Utah.
He's versatile. He's been a corner before, safety this year, and also would go down and play nickel for them at Utah. When you watched him at the Senior Bowl during 101s, a lot of times they'll throw the safeties in with the corners, and because of that corner background, he was covering wide receivers at the Senior Bowl in the 101 settings, and 101 setting is usually going to be tilted toward offense. He looked like a corner, so I think it's that versatility we see in the NFL now, where there's many times there are five and six defensive backs on the field, and it allows us to and Brandon to be creative with how he uses those five and six DBs, and as we saw it over the last 2 years, last year more with Taylor, the year before with John, is bringing one of those safeties in, kind of in that linebacker position in some of those known passing downs that just give you more players who can cover on the field in those situations. So that's what he adds for us.
We're talking to Les Snead, the Rams GM, ESPN 710 LA. Les, a lot of teams don't draft kickers. You guys have went out and found a couple of guys and signed to bring them in to compete. You guys did use one of your seventh round picks on a kicker, Sam Sloman. Why a kicker? And there must have been something you noticed, because most of the time those guys don't get drafted.
Well, interestingly, he was someone that was being recruited by a couple of other teams in the NFL for college free agency, that were looking for kickers. And there was a few of us. It seems like we were the only team, right? Maybe New England didn't have a kicker on the roster, and they took one in the fifth round that took him out of the mix. So I do know there were two other teams recruiting Sam. When we made that trade in the fourth round, we did know that, okay, we're going to get a couple more seventh-rounders, and that could be the bonus pick to allow us to go ahead and take Sam out of college free agency, that whole recruiting deal where you're not sure how it's going to go, because you'd have three teams recruiting a player to come in and compete, and they're probably all telling him, pretty much the same thing. You got a chance to win a job. So when we made the trade, that was one of the reasons we did there in that fourth round, was move back, get a couple extra sevens to give us I call it a bonus pick to pick Sam and take him off that college free agent market.
Hey, last thing for me. You go into out of the draft, you go into the season where you sign undrafted free agents. Tell us about any gems that you've been able to find on that market.
That's a passion project for our group, and the way we do it, we pair some personnel staff with the particular specific coaches at those positions, and they dive in here kind of in early April into the players that you predict to fall out of draft, and they do a nice job really really, let's call it working the system and trying to recruit. And we've had the way we allow those college free agents to play in the preseason when Sean is kind of rested the known vets, it gives them a good chance to get on film. So I probably over the last two or three years, we probably have more college free agents from our team either playing with us or other teams in the NFL because they get that exposure. But here's how it works. I do know as you're recruiting and you feel like it's going your way, it does allow you to make other picks maybe in the seventh round because you're jacked about some of these picks you have at these other positions. But the story I'd tell you is our defensive line coach really likes the kid we signed out of Brown. What about that? An Ivy League player.
Wow.
You know, I remember during the he was the most creative in texting me during the draft in terms of I caught all the pictures of the Brown mascot and logos and it gets pretty creative when those coaches are fighting for you maybe to draft their favorite college free agent. But so we're jacked about it. I know when you sit down and talk with them and you see some of these guys and their pedigree, each position has some good players. I know our wide receiver group's done a good job the last few years. They're jacked about the Syracuse player and hey, we got a fast kid coming from up at Cal Poly. So I could name names, but that is good content to watch that group go to work after the draft and try to land their favorite CFAs. And we've had success the last few years. Troy Reeder was one last year, and he ended up starting a few games for us.
Les, thank you for doing this, man. We know you've had a crazy weekend, but we really appreciate it. Congratulations on what looks to be a great draft.
Yeah, thanks, Les. I'm really excited.
Draft, right? Time will tell.
Yep, there you go.
Amen. All right, Les, have a great week.
Thanks, Les. All right. I like it. We went offense. We're going to outscore everybody, John.
It's good for you. It's good for the season ticket holders. I think that they're going to be back to what they were in Sean McVay's first year where they led the league in scoring.
Let's
I think that's
light
what
it
they're,
up. Bells and whistles, man. Bells and whistles.
That's what they're going for. Yeah. All right, coming up next, Joe Buck is going to join us, the voice of NFL football, Major League Baseball, golf, pretty much the main sports voice at Fox.
He's got a new podcast. Did you listen to any of his podcasts?
I haven't yet, but I will. I'll put it on my list.
It's called Daddy Issues, and it's some interesting stuff. It's with Oliver Hudson, who is from, of course, his sister's Kate Hudson. His dad is...
Bill, I think.
Bill Hudson. His mom is Goldie Hawn, so he comes from a famous family. And they're doing a podcast together that's really entertaining. So we'll get into all that coming up for you with Joe Buck, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. I don't want to brag, but the show is off to an unbelievable start. I got to admit. John,
and,
you got to admit?
Yeah, and Joe Buck coming up momentarily.
Yes. Joe Buck, who I have said many times, and I will ask about. Joe Buck, who I think hates the Dodgers, will join us.
You're an idiot. You know that...
You know I'm going to ask.
Oh, you should, because yeah. I think... You know what? I know... how he's going to react. He's going to totally say, you're right, I hate him.
He talks about it on his podcast. He talks about how...
Buster only told me once that he has saved emails from every team's fans asking why he hates that team. Every single team. I'm sure Joe's the same way.
So awesome. It is so awesome. I don't think Joe really does, but I guarantee you John Smoltz does.
He does not. Stop perpetuating that.
John Smoltz really does.
John Smoltz is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
When the Dodgers beat the Braves in the playoffs, was it 2 years ago, I really thought that John Smoltz was going to fling himself out of the press box.
First of all, you were at all those games, so you weren't even listening to John Smoltz. So you're not. You're just perpetuating a myth. You're just lying to the people. You have a career as a politician in the works. It's ridiculous.
Oh, God, I love that. I love that.
But I will say this, that, for years, people thought it was unfair to use Vin Scully on the NBC broadcast because he was the Dodger announcer, which I thought was stupid. Why should the rest of the country be deprived of Vin Scully? It doesn't make any sense. Oh, wow, Ramona just tweeted... about The Last Dance.
Yes.
Just Ramona's seen the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she tweeted, just wait for next week. Episode 5 is my favorite of the entire series.
Oh, nice.
So I think this one's going to deal. This one's going to deal with who leaked, who talked. Sam Smith wrote a book about the Bulls in the middle of their run, which I read. It was really good. And everyone is wondering who his source was. I heard they're going to accuse Horace Grant, and Horace is going to deny it. I got to know Horace a little bit when he came to the Lakers and was part of Phil's first championship team.
Yep.
I'm Team Horace. He's just a great guy. If he says he didn't do it, I trust him. But Michael Jordan's going to throw him under the bus next Sunday.
Well, I believe everything Jordan says.
You know, one thing I believe that Jordan says.
My whole idea of Jordan has completely changed in the last. Actually, it goes back to the Kobe Memorial. There's like a. That was a different Jordan, and now we're seeing sort of the original, the prime side of Jordan. My perception of him has changed completely over the course of the last 2 months.
I'm surprised it took you the last 2 months to get there.
Well, no, because really all we had to go on was first of all, I said this before, but it is recency bias. All of a sudden, you forget all of the things that you used to see. From Jordan, I forgot how unbelievable he was. I'm reminded now every single week of just how great he was. I'm reminded about what era he played in and how he was able to do what he was, how he did.
And he changed the definition of the word unguardable.
Yes.
I mean, you could put four guys on him and it didn't matter.
Don't put Craig Elo on him.
Well, did you see Ron Harper? That was
the greatest reaction ever.
Coach, I got Jordan. Lenny Wilkins said, I'm going to put Craig Elo on him.
And the way it was cut was Jordan had just said, yeah, well, I mean, Harper was the guy who covered me the best the entire night.
Yeah, and then later they turned out to be teammates, and then Harper came to the Lakers and won two titles with the Lakers.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Michael Thompson maintains that had James Worthy not got hurt, the Lakers would have beat the Bulls in 91. After watching that highlight package last night, do you agree with him?
Nope.
I don't either. I just think the Bulls were... The Bulls were too good.
Yeah, they were really, really friggin' good. And that was it was Jordan, but we're starting to get the other wrinkles of that team. Like, we got the Rodman episode and sort of Rodman's arc, which is fascinating, and how important a part of that team he was. And Pippen, obviously, how important he was to that mix. I mean, they had really, really good role players, too, always around Jordan. That's a credit to the greatest villain in the entire series, Jerry Krause.
Yeah, but what's interesting about Jerry Krause is, as I've told you, I've gotten to know a lot of people who are there, who are in Chicago. And Krause, he's getting hammered. Based on the conversations I've had with people that work for the Bulls during the 90s, he's getting off easy for how he treated people.
Really?
He's like the worst guy ever.
Yeah. Because last night he was dancing on the plane.
Yeah. Well, so we got, you can always send us questions, hashtag Ask Mason in Ireland. And the latest question, better dancer, Jerry Krause or Mark Madsen?
Oh, that is a really tough question.
You know what I would say about that question? They're both, and I should know a little something about this statement. They are both equally white.
Although I will say there's something jolly about Jerry Krause's dance. Something roly-poly jolly. I would
like a guy auditioning to play Santa Claus.
Yeah, I think I would give Krause, with those stubby little legs and that big round belt, I would give him a slight edge over Madsen.
Well, here's the problem with Krause, and this is going to circle back when we talk more about Isaiah later.
Yeah.
You have a body of work that speaks for itself, and you interact with several different people throughout your career. If you have a bad experience with one or two people, you can write that off as just you guys didn't mix. But if a collective group of people say that you were awful to them and you were a bad guy and you never treated anybody the way you would want to be treated, then that's it. That's your reputation.
Yeah.
And that's what Isaiah Thomas and Jerry Krause are going to have to deal with now. Now, Jerry's not here to defend himself.
Yeah,
so
Jerry's not.
But this tour Isaiah's going on doesn't make it look any less bad that you walked off when you got your ass beat 4-0 and you wouldn't shake hands. You're taught to shake hands when you're in Little League.
Yeah, I mean, that's really sort of basic. Here's the way. Actually, while we're waiting for Joe Buck, why don't we do a little bit of this? Last night, and it was, if you watched it, that the Pistons, at the end of when their championship run of two was finally ended by the Bulls, in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Pistons walked off the court without shaking hands. Here's Michael Jordan on Isaiah Thomas.
Talking about the walk-off.
Well, I know it's all bull. Whatever he says now, you know it wasn't his true actions then. You know, it's time enough to think about it. Or the reaction of the public that's kind of changed his perspective of it. You can show me anything you want. There's no way you can convince me he wasn't an ass.
Jordan's right.
Yeah. You
know, there's nothing you can... There's no apology tour. And here's the weird thing about Isaiah Thomas, Mace. Have you ever met him?
No.
Super smart.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell. He's like a really smart...
Well, yeah, James Dolan
smart.
Hired him 5 times.
Well, he's a really smart guy, and Isaiah deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and he was a great player.
Sure.
But if you think that Michael Jordan was the only one who kept him off the Dream Team, you're not doing your homework.
Right.
Isaiah Thomas wasn't going to be on that team, despite the fact that he was a first-team All-NBA player and on his way to the Hall of Fame.
Well, while we're waiting for Joe Buck, do you want to hear... Isaiah Thomas's response to Michael
sure.
Jordan. Here is Isaiah Thomas on the Get Up this morning, responding to what was on last night's episode of The Last Dance.
First of all, let me just say this. I speak for kind of three things here. I speak for the city of Detroit. I speak for the Detroit Pistons. And then I also speak for myself. So watching the documentary, I think it's interesting. It's fun. It's entertaining right now, and I think the sports world needs it. In terms of how we felt at that particular time as champions, we were coming down, Michael Jordan was coming up. And in coming up, you have certain emotions. And in coming down as champions, you have certain emotions. And I've said this many a times. Looking back over the years, had we had the opportunity to do it all over again, I think all of us would make a different decision. Now, me, myself personally, I paid a heavy price for that decision. And in paying that price, you know, I understand that this is the sports world and everything else. But at the same time, looking back over it in terms of how we felt at that particular time, our emotional state, and how we exited the floor, we actually gave the world the opportunity to look at us in a way that we never really tried to position ourselves in or project ourselves in that way. So it's unfortunate that it happened, but you know that's just how it was during that period of time.
Yeah, can't take it back now, Isaiah. Can't take it back now.
All right, joining us on the program is the lead announcer for Fox Sports, does football, does baseball, does golf, does everything, and now he's doing a podcast with Oliver Hudson called Daddy Issues. Joe Buck is on the line. Hey, Joe, thanks for doing this, man. How you holding up?
Oh, yeah, fine. No problems. Not complaining, not dumb enough to complain. All good. I'm in St. Louis. And with my daughters, who are 23 and 20, and my sons, who just turned 2 yesterday, twin boys. So I am not in any way, shape, or form lacking for things to do, especially diapers. I'm really good at that.
So I'm listening to your podcast, which I guess at one point was the number one sports podcast in America. Congratulations.
Thank you. I took that screenshot, and it's now above my bed. But I don't understand how that whole thing is calculated. Now I go back and we're like 3,009. So we're, whatever. It's like changing by the minute.
Well, it's a fun podcast. The one thing, John, me, we never had the need to follow our fathers into a business. We weren't like second generation at what we do. You have that, and you talk about that. That's really one of the themes of the podcast, is the fact that following in your dad's footsteps has been an honor, but also has been difficult. Describe that.
Well, yeah, I mean, believe me, the last thing I would ever do is complain about it. The beauty of it all is my dad was my best friend. I was kid number 7 of the 8 total that my dad was father to. So he had been through it 6 times before I showed up. I think that I got to the earth at a time when he was really ready to take a kid of his around to different events. And so I was just lucky. I was kind of the fortunate one to get to go to all the National League cities by the time I was 12 and basically be glued to his hip. And I think, seeing him, us being so close, but seeing him love what he did for a living, it was only natural that I was going to follow him into it. It just so happened that he was a broadcaster. So it didn't have to be that way, but I think when you admire a parent, mother, father, and you see how much joy they get out of going to work, it's kind of the next natural step. So believe me, I was the luckiest guy in the world. I think my daddy issue, if I have any, and I think I do, I go to therapy enough to at least I've paid enough money to a therapist to tell me that I do. I think it's kind of in my mind getting out of his shadow, especially here in St. Louis where I live. For a certain segment of the population, especially in my hometown, I will always be Jack Buck's kid, and that's great, but I also kind of think of myself that way, and I think after being at Fox for almost 30 years, that's kind of ridiculous.
Wow, 30 years of Fox. You're not even close to that old. Man, that's amazing. Good for you. We're talking to Joe Buck.
But believe me, I got hired young, and again, it was great timing. When I auditioned at Fox, I was 24, and I got hired. By the time I did my first NFL game, I had just turned 25 that year, and I had no idea what the hell I was doing. So I just was able to fake it till I made it, and fortunately, I haven't said a bad word, at least on Fox, to get fired immediately, and I've tricked them enough into letting them keep me coming back to these big events.
We're talking to Joe Buck, who has a new podcast, Daddy Issues, out that you're doing with Oliver Hudson. All right, so word has traveled to me, Joe, that Oliver and I play golf at the same club, but I've never met him. I'm an honest 10. Like, if I play good, I'll shoot 80. If I play normal, I'll shoot 85. Most important question of the day, could I take him?
Right now, yes. If you were both at your best, he's one of the best natural golfers I've ever played with. He's a really good athlete, but he's kind of a reverse sandbagger. He sandbags himself because he never puts scores in. And I think he's probably in the machine as like a 1.
Right.
And he's a lefty. He's got you'd see it in 5 seconds if you watched him on the range. But I take him to a big golf event that we have in Mexico every year, and he drives me nuts because he doesn't really care that much. He cares way less than I do, and he's just kind of slapping it around. If he really concentrated, he can play. But if you've been playing a lot, you can take him, and I'll back you. I'll get in his head.
The thing I love about this, Joe, is you're Joe Buck, right? I mean, you're the guy we listen to do all the big games. This is like, this podcast is like you being human, like you worrying about your wife liking Oliver more than she likes you sometimes.
Go ahead and say wife swap. That's what Oliver keeps throwing at me.
But I mean, it's like you getting real, which humanizes you in a really cool way.
Yeah, and I see the value in that. I don't feel like, you know, I think that's why I wrote a book a handful of years ago, and it's called Lucky Bastard, by the way.
By the way, Joe, really good, really honest and fun to read. I'm glad you brought it up.
Thank you. Well, yeah, and if you've read it, I mean, it's nothing that's going to test anybody's vocabulary, and it's a way for me to just say, okay, between ball one and strike two and your perception that I somehow hate every team and root against every team in America at the same time, you think you know me, but you probably have no idea who I really am, what I'm about, if I'm at all engaging to be around away from a microphone. And most people think because I stand next to Troy Aikman on air that I'm about 5'2", and I'm actually 6'1". So maybe you can start with the basics and work your way into personality. And that's kind of why I love doing it. It's like, here I am, you know, love me, hate me, whatever it is. But get a real snapshot of who I am, and then let me know that you like me or hate me.
Okay, right. So I said I was going to ask about this.
This is idiotic. Yeah. Mason, you're going to make a fool out of yourself. Okay. This is moronic.
So
stop.
Joe, let's be straight up here. You've been honest about everything. You've been honest about everything.
Idiotic.
You hate the Dodgers, right?
Just a
See, that's here's the deal. I got about 9 things going against me with a Dodger fan. 1, my name's not Vin. 2, I did them in back-to-back years, losing the World Series.
Yep.
And I don't do local baseball. So if I was doing it for the Dodgers, I'd be stepping on my lower lip and sad and all that, because if for no other reason, I don't get a ring. I mean, those guys get rings, and that's how they do games. And believe me, back in the day, my dad got it from all kinds of fans. Vin, I've talked to Vin about it, that he got it. But it was a different world back then. If you really hated the announcer, you had to sit down, write a letter, find out where to mail it, put a stamp on it. Now you just have to pull out your phone. And it's just, I have to get excited for the other team. But if you go back to when they beat, when they were playing the Cubs in the LCS, every Cub fan was 100% convinced that I hated the Cubs, that I was Clayton Kershaw's best friend. I said Clayton Kershaw way too many times, and I was in the bag for the Dodgers. It's just, you cannot win that game. So, no, I work at Fox. Do you think Fox thinks it's good if the Dodgers are on the national TV and in the World Series? The answer is yes. I know who pays me and where my bread is buttered.
All right, so Joe, here's the Sophie's Choice question for an announcer of your quality. You get one event to do before you die. That's it. You get one. It can be Game 7 of the World Series. It can be the last day of the U.S. Open golf tournament, or it can be the Super Bowl. But the one you pick, some other schmuck gets to do the other two. What are you picking?
I like the way you present that. I would go, my answer is always Game 7. There's nothing like it, because it's the culmination of a great month, and it just comes down to a guy on the mound and a guy at the plate, and I really don't have to do much except kind of watch and highlight the action. It's always Game 7. But if you tell me that Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson are in the final pairing on that last day of the U.S. Open, and I've never really seen Tiger at his best, at least when I'm doing it, and Phil's never won, man, as a golfer myself, I don't know. That's it. So Sophie had a tough choice. I have a tough choice. If it's Tiger and Phil, I'm gonna throw the curveball here and say I'll do the U.S. Open.
Wow. So on the podcast, you've had Mark Cuban, you've had A-Rod. You can pretty much get any guest you want, right? I mean, you're Joe Buck.
You would think.
You can get anybody.
So who's the dream guest?
Yeah, who's the dream guest?
It would be the aforementioned Tiger Woods, because the name of the podcast is Daddy Issues.
Oh,
but
boy.
He cannot come on. He'd have to be open. Like, I have no desire, and maybe he would be, and maybe I know this is a different Tiger than we saw even 5, certainly 10 years ago, but you got to come on there and be open. And if you're not, like, if, I've heard him say, you know, his biggest regret is that he didn't finish his degree at Stanford. And that can't be his biggest regret with all that's been in the soup there with Tiger Woods. So I'd love Jordan or Tiger. Those would be the two guys that I would love to get on, but I've asked both and they both said no. So there you go.
All right, Joe, last thing for me, you talk to different people. We talk to different people. I think the real answer to this is I don't know, but give me your feeling about when we're going to see sports, particularly sports with people in the stands again. Are you optimistic, pessimistic? Where's your head at with that?
I'm just willing to take anything. So I'll take sports with no fans in the stands. Let the networks put in virtual people and pipe in fake crowd noise underneath, and let's go. Let's see it. That's sooner rather than later. But I don't know where we are in September. I'd like to think there's a way to get people into these stadiums. But if it has to be after the turn of the calendar year, that's fine. I just want to see the events, and then we'll start there and we'll build as we go.
Here's the way I'm feeling about it. Let's get Joe Buck back to work as quickly
oh, yeah.
as possible.
Yeah.
Joe
That's
needs a stimulus
worried about.
We want Buck, because if we get Buck, that means we're getting games.
And I'm gonna park myself right in the booth at Dodger Stadium, and I'm gonna cheer for the Dodgers the entire time. It doesn't matter who they play.
Oh, but, That's what I'm talking about.
By the way, Joe, I know Mason. We've worked together forever. We're like an old married couple. After this is over, he'll be convinced that you don't hate the Dodgers, but there's nothing you can say that will now convince him that Smoltz doesn't hate the Dodgers.
Oh, it'll... we both hate the Dodgers. Yeah. Well,
no, I'm telling you, Joe. I said this before. I'll say it again. They played in the DS. I think it was 2 years ago they played in the DS. The Dodgers and the Braves. And I thought for sure when the Dodgers won that series, Smoltz was going to fling himself out of the press box. I thought for sure he was.
But it probably had to do with a golf date that he had maybe set up in Atlanta. So trust me, if it's the Dodgers and really any team out there, he wants to go to L.A. because he wants to play Riviera. And then the next day he wants to play Bel Air. And then the next day he wants to play LACC. It's all about where he can play golf. And in October, L.A.'s perfect for that. So he's
there
kind of
go.
A Dodger fan.
By the way, I've heard he's the one that none of us can take. Real deal as a golfer?
I mean, it's so easy for him. It's annoying.
Yeah,
he's really, really good. You know, he used to take on those other three pitchers of the Braves by himself. So it wasn't, we're all going to go play. It was Glavine and Maddox and then whoever else was in that mix against John Smoltz. So, he's really good.
Well,
hey,
listen,
Joe, thanks for doing this. And most of all, what I took from this more than anything else is I feel bad that you got to do diapers on the road. You got the fuzzy end of that lollipop, so hang in there.
Never heard that phrase before, but it's somehow very apropos these days. Lollipops and fuzzy ends.
The podcast is called Daddy Issues, and of course, Joe Buck. Thanks a lot for joining us, man. We appreciate it a lot. Go Dodgers.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Joe. Be safe.
All right.
Now that he did that and you got a chance to talk to him for 20 minutes, don't you like him?
Well, the fact that he said, I will root for the Dodgers, I think we got him to come around at some point. No, if you listen to the podcast, he comes out, he's a very, very likable guy. And he's very human. I mean, it's hard to dislike somebody when they kind of put themselves out there, lay themselves out there. I've always had that general opinion about Joe that he hates the Dodgers, but I warmed up to him a little bit there. I still am not convinced on Smoltz at all.
All right, so
golf aside.
Right before Joe came on, you played all that stuff from Isaiah Thomas.
Yes, yes.
When we come back, I will tell you why he is absolutely full of it.
All right,
just
coming
full
up next
of it.
For you. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.